for advisement. We'll hear argument now in the case of Wallace against Reliance Standard Life Insurance.
Good morning. Attorney Mark Krieger and co-counsel Matt DeVos on behalf of the appellant in this case, Bruce Wallace. We are here today because of Judge Crabb's decision in which it granted Reliance's motion for summary judgment in an ERISA disability benefits case. The court found that Reliance did undertake a careful investigation and reached the correct conclusion that Bruce Wallace was not entitled to disability payments under an ERISA plan. Mr. Wallace had originally been determined by Reliance to be temporarily and then totally disabled. Ultimately, that decision was changed by Reliance. The issue in this case is whether Reliance breached their fiduciary duty to Bruce Wallace. We are asking the court to remand this case and instruct that the plan administrator give Bruce Wallace a full and fair review. What we are asking this court to do is to follow the reasoning in both O'Reilly and the disposition that resulted in the Quinn case. There is no legal authority or standard of review which allows an ERISA disability plan administrator to ignore a claimant's medical evidence, and that is what happened in this case. Reliance had a fiduciary duty. They had to make a reasonable inquiry in specifically.
Why, counsel, did Reliance have a fiduciary duty here?
Well, they have a fiduciary duty because not only were they was Reliance the decision maker, they were also the company that paid out the benefits. In addition,
yes, but why does that equate to a fiduciary duty? The reason I'm asking this question has to do with the Supreme Court's holding in Pegram against Herdrich, which held that an HMO plan, right? The benefits in Pegram were HMO benefits. Here they're disability benefits, but that doesn't seem important. The core of the holding in Pegram is that the HMO did not have a fiduciary duty to the person whose medical benefits were at stake. The Supreme Court seemed to hold that an entity enforcing the terms of some written plan, the HMO was a form of insurer, is entitled to enforce the plan without any special fiduciary duty to be favorable to the applicant. And the question I'm asking is, why isn't that true here when Reliance Standard Life Insurance Company proposes to enforce the terms of its contract?
Primarily because Reliance is wearing two different hats in this case.
That was exactly the claim in Pegram. That was, in fact, what this court had held in Pegram, and we were reversed by the Supreme Court.
Well, from a nuts and bolts standpoint, we pled that they had a fiduciary duty, and Reliance admitted that they had a fiduciary duty. Also,
I'm trying to figure out what the right rule of law is. One doesn't admit law or anything like that. One can admit facts. But the theory that they're wearing two hats, therefore they had a fiduciary duty, was, as I say, something this court accepted in Pegram and something the Supreme Court rejected. None of the parties' briefs in this case discusses Pegram. Both sides seem quite unaware of it. But it is, after all, our obligation to follow the Supreme Court.
Well, I believe, Your Honor, that in an ERISA situation, and as cited in O'Reilly, as to the duties that an administrator has, that duty is above and beyond that of the standard, for example, HMO insurance, do I have coverage or don't I? Denied. Or, for example, in a property damage insurance claim, is there coverage or not? As long as it's not in bad faith, they are not at that higher duty. In this case, the reason there should be a higher duty is because both the participants and the beneficiary are relying on the administrator, and they are locked in.
Let me ask my question in a different way, because the arguments you're making now are, again, arguments considered and rejected in Pietman. Is there any language in ERISA that you're relying on which suggests that there might be a distinction between this kind of coverage and the kind of coverage for medical benefits that was at issue in Pietman?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
What language in ERISA are you relying on for the fiduciary duty proposition? Section of ERISA.
1104.
Well, we'll go look at it.
Okay. And, Your Honor, the duty in this case, and even if you set aside for the moment the fiduciary duty, the O'Reilly case that this court considered said that an administrator has to have substantial evidence to deny benefits. In this case, we feel that there was evidence to find that Mr. Wallace was disabled. But we're not asking the court to make that finding. What we're asking the court to do is let Reliance do basically provide Mr. Wallace with what they were to provide, which is a fair and full decision. And they did not in this case because they ignored medical evidence that was before it.
Why should Reliance have credited Dr. Turner's subsequent letter, which was prepared in support of Wallace's administrative appeal? In other words, why weren't they entitled to rely on the statements of his own physicians? You know, Turner and Becker, Dr. Turner and Becker.
There is nothing that says that once a claimant who's denied benefits provides additional information that Reliance then doesn't have to look at it. In addition, Your Honor,
it's not a matter of looking, it's a matter of crediting after they'd, you know, already seen earlier Drs. Turner and Becker.
Dr. Turner, the same doctor who submitted a few months later the letter.
Right.
Dr. Turner's PCA says that Mr. Wallace cannot stand, sit, or walk for more than a few hours a day. And it also says his exertional level is light duty.
Right.
And all it was, Your Honor, was checking boxes in a form that Reliance provided. What Dr. Turner's letter did was go beyond that and fully explain the diagnosis of the fact that Mr. Wallace had 4 or 5 ailments with 20 different medications and the effect that had on his ability to stand or walk or sit, and that he couldn't do the same duties. And, Your Honor, before I leave time for rebuttal, Reliance in 1998 did the same report themselves and found at that time that Mr. Wallace was fully and totally disabled. And that report had less restrictions and less limits than the report that Dr. Turner did in June. And what a reasonable inquiry should have been, follow up with Dr. Turner's letter to find out exactly what he means by that. And that's what Reliance should have done. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Krieger. Mr. Bachrach.
Thank you. May it please the Court. Good morning. Joshua Bachrach representing Reliance Standard. Your Honor mentioned the issue of fiduciary duties, and I believe we did in our brief mention that, to the extent that, as I'll get into later, this Court has always held, when we're talking about the arbitrary and capricious standard and whether conflict exists, based on PGRM, in MERS In Perlman, this court has always said it isn't enough to simply say you wear the two hats. That doesn't cut it. You have to show something more, and that's what doesn't exist in this case.
I think you just cited two pre-Pegram cases, so
I'm sorry,
you didn't rely on Pegram in those cases.
Well, I'm sorry, I got confused with the dates on those. But this court has said that you can't just make that argument that you wear both hats. You have to provide evidence of it. And that's what was done here.
As you may know, of course, the Ninth Circuit has held the opposite, and last Friday the Supreme Court granted certiorari to resolve the conflict between the Ninth Circuit's decision and, in particular, our decision in Perlman.
There's a lot of conflict.
Do you think that conflict would counsel holding on to this till the Supreme Court acts? Probably by the end of June?
Well, based on the track record with the Ninth Circuit, I'd say no. We have an 88% reversal rate on ERISA cases from the Ninth Circuit, reversal, according to the clerk of the Supreme Court, Mr. Souter. I think what's important, counsel had mentioned the issue of the evidence and what approved the claim. He had a transplant surgery. There was no hesitation to approve the claim based on that information. But let's look at what happened afterward. We know that he had an excellent result. That's from his own doctors. The court was swayed, apparently, and I think rightfully so, by evidence that we see in the record, that at the time he's recuperating from this surgery, he's telling his doctors that he doesn't plan to return to work and that he's retiring. We also see, at the same time he's undergoing his recovery, he buys a lake house in Wisconsin and moves from the Chicago area to there. Why? Because he's already told his doctors he's retiring. That's the evidence that the court saw. Mr. Wallace made a lifestyle change. He was 58 years of age, decided he didn't want to return to work. This policy doesn't pay that benefit. This is a disability policy, not a retirement plan. When we look at the argument here, though, by Mr. Wallace, I think it's important to look at the context of the cases that have said here's a duty and the extent of that duty. Each of those cases was involving an arbitrary and capricious standard of review. So why is it different in this case, which is de novo? It's different because in those cases you're giving deference to the plan. Even if this court disagrees with the plan's decision, it is affirmed if it's reasonable. That doesn't exist in a de novo review. And as Judge Rovner is well aware, this review is de novo based on the Perugini-Christen decision from last year. We also see that even in the cases where this duty does exist, in the Heitschu case, the court said it exists when it's possible to question the loyalty. And as I just mentioned earlier, in several cases this court has always held that it's not automatically possible to question based on the fact that they pay benefits. You have to show more. And in this case, the plaintiff didn't show more. The only thing this plaintiff argued was you didn't have this additional investigation. But that's truly putting the cart before the horse. If the duty doesn't exist, they don't have to.
Do you know what I'm kind of interested in? Reliance saw fit to consult an audiologist to review Mr. Wallace's claims of his hearing loss.
Correct.
But, you know, considering the contradictory evaluation from the doctors, I just wonder, you know, why Reliance didn't consult an independent physician.
I think Your Honor hit the nail on the head right there. It is so contradictory, but let's also look at the context of it. This is by Dr. Turner. He's the family practice doctor. He's not the nephrologist. He's not a neurologist. He's not a specialist. He's also the same doctor who a few months earlier, and this is in the record, describes various conditions, describes the medicine, but doesn't say anything about an inability to work. Counsel said that this was simply a form that was checked off on the PCA. But there's also a section on that PCA, Your Honors, that says any additional comments, and he didn't check it off. He didn't mention anything.
Now, is he an internist? Am I wrong?
My understanding from looking at his letterhead is his family practice doctor. But you also look at the big claim that plaintiff is making here, or at least he did at the trial court, was the medications. You didn't look at their effect on the medications. That report doesn't even discuss what medications he's having. The district court looked at that argument and said he's taking medications, but You haven't identified them, but more important, you don't tell us what effect they've had on him. So without any mention of any effect on them, what is there to investigate, especially when you look at his nephrologist, who's in a much better position to comment on him, and Dr. Turner himself, who say he's capable of doing this light-duty work months earlier. Returning to this duty to investigate, this court said that even when there is a duty, and we don't think under this standard of review there is, we don't think that there's any evidence of a conflict to warrant it, but even when there is, it's not a duty to do a full-blown investigation. And that's here what he's trying to place on us. We see that Reliance Standard, as Your Honor said, did get an audiologist. It did request all the medical records. He's not arguing that we never got any medical records, that there are some out there that we didn't get. We also see that Reliance Standard, before discontinuing, sent these forms to the doctors and asked for their opinions. That's what they relied on. So we know there's no duty to do a full-blown investigation. The question is it reasonable? And in my opinion, and I would think in yours as well, it's more than reasonable. They did an adequate and full investigation here. This case to me is similar to the Donato decision. In that case, Your Honors may recall, the plaintiff had argued that the psychiatric ailment wasn't fully investigated and should have been given more credence by the plan and the court. But the plan, or the court, at the district court level, and at this appellate level, correctly stated that you have to still provide some objective evidence of what you're claiming. And that wasn't done there, and it wasn't done here. What plaintiff is doing is trying to get a second bite of the apple. He had the full and fair review. He had the opportunity to submit evidence, but didn't do enough. And I believe, Your Honors, when you look at the argument being made here, that he's arguing, we don't even want judgment, we want a remand, he's conceding that the record as it exists does not support the claim. That's the only interpretation that can be made of what he's arguing. The district court looked at the investigation, found it to be complete and reasonable, looked at the evidence, found that it did not support the claim, and correctly decided that benefits aren't owed. And we ask that that decision be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. DeVos.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, Dr. Turner is a board-certified internist, cardiologist specialist. And I think what we have, what the problem is here, is that there is not medical evidence refuting Dr. Turner's opinion in his September 5 letter. All we have is a PCA with boxes checked, which say he can stand for about 2 hours, a little bit more, he could sit for a little bit more than 2 hours, and he could walk for a little bit more than 2 hours. And look closely at the PCA, where it says that he can exert himself. It's not saying he can work an 8-hour day. It says that he can exert himself at a light duty. Light duty work is what he could possibly do. It doesn't say he can work an 8-hour day. And to me, it doesn't stand to reason that someone who can't stand for more than 2 hours a day could alternate and walk later on in that same day. So I think the PCA is ambiguous at best. Following the PCA, we have a letter. And take it for what it is. It is a medical record by Dr. Turner, a board-certified internist. There's nothing in the medical records refuting that. And yet there's no follow-up done in that regard, even assuming it's contradictory. There's nothing specifically that they can point to that says that Dr. Turner's opinion later on is wrong. And to me, it's consistent. Now, regarding the medications, a doctor, they argue there's no effect listed in the medical records. But I'm wondering, why would there be? If a doctor prescribes sleeping pills, he doesn't have to write into the medical records that it's causing drowsiness to assume later on that someone can't operate heavy machinery full-time at a job. Essentially, Reliance is saying that there must have been something in there that would have said that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.